sometimes life just isn't fair. Sometimes life throws a sucker punch at us, right? And we don't know what to do about it. In this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast, I'm going to share two really awful events that I experienced recently. But more importantly, I'm going to tell you how I won the mental battle of it, because sometimes these things, man, to deal with them, they're not easy, to say the least. I'm going to share how I pulled myself out of a rather dark place in this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast. Hope you'll join us. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Trading Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 50,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready, because school is now in session. This week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our brand new one-on-one sales training program. We're going to be talking all about it at the end of the podcast. If you'd like to have a quick look at it now, visit yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. Now, today, it's going to be a very different podcast, and you're going to hear me. You know, my tone is going to be a little different, perhaps a little bit more somber than I usually am, and probably not as lighthearted as I usually am, and because I'm going to be sharing a few, how should we say, not so good things that have been going on in my life, and I'm going to be sharing them from a place not where I'm looking for sympathy or to piss and moan or to have a pity party with you, but from a place of that of a humble student who's learned quite a bit and simply wants to pay it forward and maybe help you out, because there's some really nasty shit that I had to deal with in the last few months. Haven't shared it here, never really thought it was the time or place. I'm a rather private person, and now I really want to, you know, share some of the lessons that I learned, and I'm hoping it'll help you out. So here's what happened. There's two major things, and the very first one was that I found out in August that my wife's breast cancer had returned. And those of you who know me and you've been following me a while, this is her second go-round with it. The first one was in 2010. We're once again rather fortunate because we caught it early. We caught it at a stage one. And just before I continue, you know, for all the females that are listening out there, I really don't care how old you are. You absolutely have to go for that mammogram. I mean, it is, I mean, two times I can tell you that that early detection has quite literally saved my wife's life. So, I mean, you absolutely have to do that. And I know sometimes we get busy with work and conquering the world and life and everything else, but life is way too precious for you not to catch something like this, right? And be able to get that early detection where you can, you know, kind of see it early anyway. But the worst thing about this whole thing is that we literally found out the day before my son Nick was proposing to his girlfriend. So we obviously didn't want to, you know, spoil his wonderful moment. So we had to kind of keep it, you know, inside for a little while until he proposed, and also until, you know, we had a few more facts that came in. But, you know, I want to kind of take you through something and kind of my thinking at the time. I had all these scenarios that were running through my head when I found out, okay, here we go, the cancer's back again. And they weren't good scenarios. I mean, including, you know, I had this horrible, you know, scenario that I was running through my head that she wouldn't be there for the wedding. and you know the wedding's a few years off, and that's not healthy thinking. That's not really a good place to be in, right? We've all been there with different things in our in our life, and it's not a great place. So one of the things that I chose to do, one of the tactics, it's actually a tactic that I talk about here quite a bit, and I used a pattern interrupt. And first of all, just to let you know what a pattern interrupt, it's something that you do, in this context anyway, because I've always taught you about pattern interrupts, using them on other people, using them when you're prospecting, using them when somebody throws an objection at you. And it's really doing something that's off script, something that's out of the ordinary, that interrupts a pattern that isn't necessarily productive. So now in this context, you know, the pattern is kind of like, you know, that stinking thinking thing, right? That negativity where you're running out these horrific freaking scenarios that just are way too early to be thinking that way and not based on any evidence or any, you know, any conversation from, oh, I don't know, the oncologist and, you know, the physicians and the people that are involved in my case. So what I chose to do, and it helped me out quite a bit, I thought of something that the late Zig Ziglar used to say. And in his goals program, he talked about the word fear. And a really cool way to redefine fear is to think of it as an acronym, right? Each letter is going to stand something. So you have F-E-A-R. And what he said was, we need to think about fear as being false evidence that appears real. False evidence that appears real. So what I did was, every time I'd have those shitty thoughts about her not making it, about our, you know, our time together getting cut way too short or whatever, at that point, we really, all we had was, you know, that initial word that, you know, the cancer had returned. We didn't know the extent. We didn't know if it was terminal, which it's not, by the way. It's not terminal. It's, you know, I hope I mentioned it before. We caught it again. Last time around, we caught it at stage zero. This time, we caught it at stage one. So actually having a surgery tomorrow, by the way. So hopefully you guys will remember us in your thoughts and prayers. Today's November 7th. Her surgery will be on November 8th. And so what I did was, again, I'm having those, whenever I would have those bad thoughts, I would say, you know, this is that thing, you know, this is that stinking thinking shit, man. This is false evidence that appears real. This is not based on anything. This is me letting my emotions go and run the show. And that's no good, right? So the other thing that I decided to do that really helped me out a lot is I find that in order to stop a particular behavior, you have to replace the bad behavior with something that's more productive and useful. So what I chose to do was to change the bad thinking with some visualization. And I remember at the beginning of our marriage, or actually a few years into it, when we wanted to start a family, we, you know, we had very firm goals that we had in our life, and we wanted to be able to afford to have a family, specifically have her be a stay-at-home mom. So I remember back then the visualization, or the, you know, the thing that I would visualize would be her standing at the fence and, you know, holding a young baby and waving, you know, goodbye as I went off to work. And that's what I would picture. And that's what, you know, every time I was out there and I'm beating the bushes and I'm trying to, you know, sell things and you know, dealing with rejection and all that kind of stuff, I would go and I would focus on that picture. And it was, in a way, it was a pattern interrupt because it stopped the bad behavior, but it replaced the bad behavior or the bad visualization, right, with, you know, something that was very, very productive and healthy. And you could certainly do that too. And that's something that I decided to do here. So, you know, that was a technique that I used earlier in my life. Let me tell you how I used it here with the visualization. What I did was I decided to picture the two of us, you know, much older than we are today, right? My wife and I were in our 50s. So I pictured this thing, this scenario, where we're two, you know, old mofos, if you will, and we're sitting there reminiscing about a life well lived. At this point in time, in this visualization, we're grandparents. We're quite old. I have to say that I am cooler than I ever was, and I have grown back my hair, and I am incredibly fit and very tough. Right? It's my visualization. I can do what I want. But, you know, there we are. We're reminiscing about this wonderful life, right? And again, looking at it. And also, too, I picture us saying something to each other. And what we're saying to us is actually a line from our wedding song. Our wedding song. And those of you, all you youngins that are listening to this, this is probably not going to resonate with you because this is a song that really hasn't been played in like forever, but it's an old Eddie Rabbit, Crystal Gayle song called Just You and I. And that was our wedding song. And there is a line in the song at the very end of the song. And the line is, we made it, you and I. And I think of us kind of saying that to each other. You know, we've been through every scenario, including, you know, this health challenge that she's facing. And I picture that. And the thing that you have to remember about the brain is that it doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's not. Now, we kind of alluded to that before when we said, you know, the brain, in a way, kind of believes those shitty visualizations and those worries, right? We don't want that, but the opposite is true too. It believes the positive things. So in my head, I'm thinking about these two people growing older together. I think, now is that going to make it happen, folks? I don't know. There's a lot of people who feel it does, right? You're kind of manifesting an image, and there's this whole law of attraction thing. I'm not here to argue that one way or the other, but I can tell you what it definitely does. What it definitely does is it puts your thoughts in a good place. And, you know, it when your thoughts are in a good place, we're more productive, right? And I think that's very, very important. So that's kind of, you know, some of the things that I did right there. Now, there's more things here that I want to share with you, how I kind of turn this situation around and all that. The next thing that I chose to do was to kind of find something that you can control. And in this case, there is one thing you can absolutely control. Now, I couldn't control her getting cancer. I can't go there and make this surgeon be the best damn surgeon. Actually, it's going to be a team of surgeons. It's going to be a 10-hour surgery tomorrow, by the way. I can't go there and make them awesome, right? That is out of my control. But what I can do is I can control my thoughts. Now, and finding something that I can control in the situation. So I want you to jot this down. If you're in a place where you can, you know, write it down safely. I don't want you doing this in the car, obviously. But when you have something that's challenging, you have something that's shitty and awful and tragic, one of the things that makes it so awful is that we feel like a victim. And I think it hits us. I mean, look, it sucks no matter who you are in life. But I think it hurts us maybe a little more than the average person in sales, quite simply because I think that we're all used to being in control, aren't we? I mean, we control a lot of things. We control the dialogue and the questions and the flow of information and the people in the room and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you have something that you can't control. So you need to find something you can. So what I chose to do with my wife's challenge is that, again, we have the surgery tomorrow. So this may sound silly, but it put my head in a good place and it made me feel like I'm actually helping. What I chose to do was do a lot of food prep. Now, is that going to make her better right away? No. Kind of makes me better. It makes me feel like I'm helping and that I'm not somebody here that's a victim and who's out of control and I can't do anything to help the situation. So what I did was, you know, I made a whole big thing of it too, like, you know, not to my wife, but to me. Yeah, I went out, I shopped for the shit, and I did a lot of food prep. Like, for example, I made, and I'm telling you, I'm not going to brag, but I think this baked ziti that I made for tomorrow, the night, the first night that she'll be in the hospital for my kids, which I refer to as kids, but my youngest now is 23, oldest 27. And but I think it's going to be pretty effing epic. And so I made this baked ziti. And I'm going to tell you why. I have to say this because this episode today is rather somber, and I need some stuff to kind of lighten this the hell up. But the reason why I think this is epic ziti that I made is that I chose to do it with a homemade vodka sauce. And in that vodka sauce, I'm not going to lie, I felt like putting some freaking pancetta in there. And that shit is delicious. But anyway, also, what, you know, I decided to do too, in terms of that taking control thing, right, and finding the thing that we can control, is that on the food prep, I have a couple of London broils that I picked up, marinated some of them. In addition to that, what I did was I marinated some chicken that we can grill. I cut up a whole mess of chicken cutlet that I can use for anything, man. And I'm going to be making chicken franchise, chicken marcel. I feel like freaking Forrest Gump with all the different kinds of chicken, all the kinds of shrimp or whatever it is. Shrimp Creole. And this, that's going to be me talking about all the effing chicken that I made, right? But doing that, I made a couple of meatloaves. Oh, by the way, getting back to that penny, that vodka sauce that I made, and I figured, hey, what the hell, man? I'm making it anyway. Why not make a little extra and freeze it? So that all I got to do is nuke that shit, and then, you know, I can have a really quick throw-together meal. All in all, right? I was doing this today, too. All in all, I've prepped about 14 meals. Pretty cool, right? But here's the thing. Is that making her better? No. Again, it's making me better. And I can be strong for her. And it's keeping me... I find... You know, this is the other thing, too. I find when you're going through a lot of shit in your life, we've got to become a moving target, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's harder to hit a moving target. This target that's moving and zigzagging and shit, so that life just can't come and step on you again or kick you in the balls again, right? They're kind of a moving target. And that's what I've been trying to do. Try to keep busy, trying to keep my thoughts elsewhere. I find that when I'm just sitting around moping, things just kind of continue to get shitty. For example, just a quick thing, and then I want to get it back to productive things that we can do. I don't know about you guys. I call it the FU inventory. I don't know if you've ever taken an FU inventory. What an FU inventory is when you have one or two bad things going on in your life, it's not enough. You know what I mean? It's like we're gluttons for punishment. Then we start thinking, and another thing, this other thing is pissing me off. Make that number three, the third effed up thing going on in my life. You know what? Yeah, while we're at it, that prick over at the store the other day, he didn't say hello, or my friend didn't say hello, or this person did, or this person doesn't give a shit. You know, and next thing you know, you start going on this whole FU inventory, and that's not good. So that's why I like to kind of keep moving. So I told you about the whole food prep thing, but the other thing that I chose to do, and this one I think is rather important, and we're going to be talking about it, not just now, but in a little while when I tell you about the second awful thing that I experienced in the last few months. I think that one of the things that we have to do is we have to make a choice in knowing that we can define the situation. And remember, you know, we're not in control of anything else. It's very hard for us to be in control sometimes of things. Like, again, I couldn't control her getting that cancer. I can't control the surgeon tomorrow, or if it's God's will, you know, to call her home or to live or die. I can't control that. But what I can control is how I choose to define this situation. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I've chosen to look at it as a chance for my wife and I to become closer. I can tell you that the last bout in 2010 brought us way closer. We stopped with a lot of the petty stupidity that couples can get involved in, and we're no different. I mean, we've been together since, I met her at 17 years old back in 1983, and we've been together ever since, married in 88, 33 years of marriage, 38 years together. And I'm here to tell you that there's times that you say to yourself, like, why are we arguing over stupid shit? Why are we allowing ourselves to be consumed with stupid shit? So, you know, I'm choosing to define this as an opportunity for us to become even closer. Also, for us to stop, especially me, taking things for granted. Nothing's guaranteed, right? I mean, that's what these things do. I kind of see them, in a way, as life, fate, God, whoever it is that you want to say it is, tapping you on the shoulder and saying, slow the hell down. Maybe enjoy your life a little bit more. That's what I'm choosing as the definition of this, or the opportunity, if you will. I find that a lot more productive than sitting here having stupid internal dialogues like, why does this happen to me? Why me? There's about a million other pricks I can think of more worthy of this type of thing. See, that's not good thinking, right? It might feel good at the time, but it's really not good thinking. That's not going to help you. And I also found that when you start thinking that way, it gets into that FU inventory. Then you start thinking of other shit bothering you. And then you stay in this negative frenzy. And that's not a good place for us. And I can tell you, we don't make money in sales being negative, right? I mean, seriously, we don't. Something else that's really helped me through this situation is actually something from a TV series, something that was on HBO. I don't know if we have any fans out there of a series that was on a while ago, Boardwalk Empire. And there was the character, Nucky Thompson. And there was one scene there where, you know, he was in some trouble, and financially he had to kind of bury some money, and they had to watch their money for a while. And he said to, I guess it was his wife, I don't know if they were married at the time, but said to his wife, you know, because she was a little bit, you know, depressed over the situation, because they were kind of living the life of luxury, and they had to scale back, and they had to do some things that weren't as showy and all that. Money was going to be tight for a while. And he said to her, when this is all, he said to her, have you ever been to Paris? And she said, no. He says, when this is over, when this ordeal that we're going through is over, I'm going to take you to Paris. And he said something along the lines of, it's always good to have something to look forward to. I want you to really think about that, and please jot that down. It is always good to have something to look forward to. So what, you know, my wife and I have chosen to do here, to keep our thoughts positive, and to keep us in a place where, you know we're going to beat this. And, you know, we want to have some things to look forward to afterwards, right? And one of the things we decided is that, man, it's been 3 years since we've taken a cruise. And part of that I can blame on COVID, right? And the world kind of shutting down. But we really want to get back to that. And hell, if we can't do a cruise, we could certainly go and do an all-inclusive somewhere. So we want to do that. You know, one of the things that my wife said to me, that, like, as far as a regret, and I feel awful that we've never done this, is that she said to me that, you know, since we've been married, you know, all this time, we've never had a birthday party for her. And, you know, we've had, you know, it's not that we haven't celebrated her birthday. We've always been very kind of low-key with our birthdays. Me too. And generally, you know, our tradition is you pick whatever meal you want and we make it for you. You know, sometimes in later years now, I've taken her and the kids to our favorite Italian restaurant, things like that. But we've never done a full-blown party for her where all of our friends from her entire life and different jobs she's had and, you know, these people that when she was on the PTA, all these different chapters of her life, get them all together and just have a hell of a celebration. And that's also becoming part of my visualization, because I picture us annihilating this cancer and beating it to a pulp, to the point I feel sorry for the cancer, the kind of beating we're going to throw onto this cancer. But I picture now, almost like that visualization I said earlier, I picture us at that party and saying, man, what hell of a year. We won the battle, right? I picture that. And I see it in my mind as a certainty, not as wishful thinking. But also, you know, we had an interesting October in that we knew that the surgery was coming up November 8th. There is a two-month recovery period for her surgery. By the way, she's doing a double mastectomy, and she's having reconstructive surgery. It's a 10-hour surgery tomorrow. And but there's a two-month recovery period. It's like, actually, I'm sorry, I'm saying two months. I think they said 4 to 6 weeks, but in our head, we have it as 2 months, kind of like through the end of the year type of thing. And so what we chose to do in the month of October is get a lot of things out of our system and go hang out with a lot of friends. Our wedding anniversary is in October. So's my brother and his wife's anniversary. So we all got together, went to one of our favorite restaurants. Laura and I also went out east. I live out on Long Island, in case you haven't picked up from the accent, follows me around like a bad shadow. And we were out there, and it's just a beautiful fall day. And we went out to this place on Long Island called Greenport, Long Island. A lot of quaint little shops and pubs and wonderful places you can enjoy, you know, a cocktail outside. And we were there, and my wife said to me, you know, it's really a shame. You know, we go out, but not as much as, like, either one of us would like to. We're always busy, and, you know, then we're tired, and we're just kind of chilling out in the backyard or whatever. And she said, it's such a shame. This is, you know, about an hour away from where we live, but yet it's like, I don't know if you guys have anything like this by you. Like, you travel an hour, but it's like you went to another world. It's like you've left the country. It's a whole other world out there on the east end of Long Island. And she said to me, you know, because sometimes, you know, like you guys, you know, money can get tight and things like that. We have college loans we're paying. We have all kinds of stuff, right? And, you know, she said, you know, there's vineyards out here on the east end where we could go out there. They have picnic tables outside. You buy a bottle of wine and you could bring a picnic lunch. I mean, it doesn't get any cheaper than that, right? So, you know, we decided, you know, we're going to do these things. We're gonna take that cruise. We're gonna, you know, have that birthday party and toast, you know, the victory that we have. So that was kind of the first thing that happened. The second not so good thing that happened to me, and again, this isn't a Feel Sorry for Paul podcast. I'm using what I've been through, so you know that I'm not talking theory today. I want to talk from a practical perspective, you know, from the place where, hey, I use these things and they help me. So the second thing that happened was my brother passed away. And, you know, I come from a family of six. And this, you know, particular brother, I was very close with him. And, you know, I made a mistake that I don't want you to make. You know, before I tell you the things that I believe I did right and that helped me, this one comes with a mistake, and you can't make this mistake that I made. So I found out probably around dinner time on the day that he passed away, his daughter had contacted me. And, you know, I was in my office here in my house. I work out of the house. And in the next room, my two sons didn't know about it. And I just could hear them having such a nice night that I didn't want to ruin their night. So, you know, I chose not to say anything that day, right, or that evening. At the same time, my wife was working the night shift at the hospital where she works. And I knew she was going to be working at like midnight. And, you know, I thought it would be awful. She was exhausted that day when she left for work. I knew that she'd be exhausted by the time she got home probably, you know, by the time she got home, it'd be like 12:30 or something like that. And then say, oh, yeah, how was your day? You know, by the way, you know, my brother died. And, you know, she's not going right to bed after that. She's naturally going to want to talk and console me. And next thing you know, she's going to be up till 2-3 in the morning. So it was a bad mistake, me not saying anything right away, because that meant I had to bottle this up. And here I was very upset. I should have seen it coming, but I allowed it to sucker punch me. And, you know, my office is in a place in the house where people have to cut through. So I couldn't even have a good cry in my office because I didn't want, you know, people to see me upset and then have to ruin their night. And that was not good because, like I said, I had to, you know, it would have helped me tremendously to have leaned on people who, especially initially, who love me and want to support me and don't want to see me, you know, in a bad place. And by the way, I think that happens with our personalities a lot in sales, or if you're in a leadership role. You're so used to being the leader, being the strong one. Sometimes it's a purely egotistical thing, like we think it shows weakness. But I did do something that I think was just very, very productive. I went out in my yard and I sobbed like you wouldn't believe. I mean, I don't remember the last time I cried that hard. And, you know, I was trying to hold it down so the neighbors didn't think I was a bit of a wreck. And by the way, it was interesting because I kind of, you know, I think you have to get these things out of your system, right? We tend to sweep emotions under the carpet. I think it's important we get them out of our system. But I also think it's important that we don't stay in that place longer than we need to. So at one point, it kind of, an accidental pattern interrupt occurred when I said, man, this must look horrendous to my neighbors. They're probably thinking, you know, like maybe like I'm drunk out here crying over something. Like, how does this look to my neighbors? And it made me laugh a little bit, right? And, you know, even, you know, the fact that there I was, a grown man, sobbing out in my backyard. But like I said, sometimes it just feels good to get it out. And, you know, I don't think it makes us less of a man, or it makes us weak to have human emotions. And please don't ever forget that. But I chose to be in control of my thoughts. And I thought of something that helps me redefine this horrible thing and losing, you know, someone that I love very dearly, my brother. What I thought of was something I actually had sent him a month before he passed, because a month before he passed, one of his best friends passed away. And he was in the hospital at this point, and he was rather weak, my brother. And we were texting each other, and I sent him something that has given me a tremendous amount of strength. When I sent it to him, it made him feel wonderful and redirected his thoughts. And then I chose to use the very thing that I helped him with to help myself. And it's a quote from Dr. Seuss, by the way. And it goes something like this: don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Doesn't that make such an interesting difference in the thought process? If we sit there, and obviously we're sad when we have a loss, and we choose to smile instead and to, you know, just reflect on the good times. And that changed my whole thinking. So what I chose to do was, you know, think about the good times I had with my brother, not just, you know, the whole part of it being unfair. A guy 67 years old or whatever he was, he passed, and, you know, that's not right, that's not fair, and it's effed up and all this other stuff. Instead, I thought about, you know, all the laughs that we had together, all the times me and him went camping, some of the funny shit that happened throughout our lives. In fact, I want to tell you guys a funny story because it'll get me, you know, it'll keep me from being sad, right? I'll tell you a funny story about this guy. When I was growing up, a lot of my older brothers, man, they had grown up in like the 60s and early 70s. So it was a different time. I grew up in the 80, late 70s and 80s. And I had this downstairs bedroom. And one night, it had to be like 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, I was like a real night owl back then. I would, you know, stay up late, sleep in and everything. And about 2 a.m., there's a knock on my window. Somebody's outside. And I'm like, who the hell is this, right? And I have to tell you, admittedly, sometimes my friends would knock on my window late at night, not at 2 a.m. at that age. But, yeah, I didn't know what the hell it was. I look out there, and there is my brother, the one that I just lost, right? And he's got a big shit-eating grin on his face, and he's, like, motioning and saying at the same time, open the front door. Right now, he had the upstairs bedroom, and I'm like, you know, like, I don't know, maybe he was out late, lost his key or something like that, I don't know. So I open the front door, and he's laughing his ass off. And I said, what the hell's so funny? I thought you were home. He goes, I was home. He goes, I was up on the roof getting high, and I rolled off the roof and fell off the roof and locked myself out of the house. Like, all that kind of, like, dopey shit happened to him. And, you know, like, focusing on that. And I started sharing stories like I just did with you. You see, in telling a positive story, it lifts our spirits. And it helps us. And a lot of my friends who didn't know how to help me. Right? Doesn't that happen to us sometimes? We're trying to console a friend. We don't know what to say. We can't bring the person back. We're trying to be very sensitive to their feelings. You know, one of the best things you could ever do, by the way, is be a good listener. And when they want to honor that person through the storytelling, just have a genuine interest in it. That's what my friends did, and it was the best medicine in the whole world. Now, I want to tell you guys something, and this is kind of a good place for us to start winding down the podcast. I had a secret weapon going into this thing with my wife and going into the loss of my brother. And I want to pass this secret weapon on to you because I believe it saved me from going down a very dark path. I believe it'll save you too. Now, the secret weapon is this, and I think it helps with any kind of a challenge, is that, and I have this phrase, there's got to be a better way to put it, but this is how I say it to myself. I stay ahead of my mental health. My tongue twisted there, and I said mental. Let me say it again. I stay ahead of my mental health. And, you know, one of the things that I did, and I did this many years ago, is I simply made a list of all the things that bring me joy, and then I just made it a point to actually do those things. All the things that make me happy. How many times are you doing something, and you're saying, I got to do this more often, man. This feels good. I enjoy this. Or you're around loved ones. We need to do this more. I love hanging out with you. That kind of thing. And then we get caught up in life. So let me give you like just a little snapshot of some of the things that wound up on my list. You know, I've talked about this one on the podcast numerous times. After dinner, weather permitting, I love to sit outside and have some quiet thinking time. Love having a cigar after dinner. I love having family dinners on Sundays. So we made it a thing. And we didn't like put it in as like some kind of like hard, fast rule. We all talked about it. It's something we all realize that life is becoming more complicated. I told you, my son Nick is now engaged. Things, you know, he's not going to be in the house after 3 years from now. So, you know, we want to have that time while we can. So, you know, the family dinner's on Sunday. In fact, we had a wonderful one tonight. I also chose, here's something, you know, to rekindle a lot of my old friendships. Because, you know, what happened to me for a while is that, you know, I lost a lot of my very dear friends. Not to death or anything. I mean, you know, the friendship just kind of dissipated. And it was nothing anyone said. No falling out was had. But you know what happens sometimes? You have these friendships when you're younger. And then everybody is kind of at the same place at the same time. You're getting married. You're starting your family. You're trying to kick ass in your career. Several of us, you know, ended up owning businesses and traveling. And you guys know the deal. And some of it's just all bullshit excuses. But, you know, meanwhile, you lose someone that you have this rich history with. That, you know, it's funny because I rekindled an old friendship with my buddy Mark. He was the drummer in my band. And we rekindled that friendship. And it's so cool when you have an old friend in your life. And Mark and I go back, man. We were, I knew of him. We used to see each other, like, you know, at church. You know what? You know, my parents dragged us to church every Sunday growing up. And, you know, see him around the neighborhood. I saw him in school and stuff. But I started hanging out with him when we went into the same band the year I graduated from high school, 1983. And, you know, dear friends. And then, you know, I got married, he got married. You know, the rest just kind of, you know, drove us apart. But I was down visiting him right before the world just took a shit with the pandemic back in March 2020. We're hanging out in his backyard, man. And I'll tell you what, it's a sign of a good friendship when you could pick up right where you left off. We're out in the backyard. It was like 4:30 in the effing morning. We're out there slamming down, you know, bourbons and cigars and stuff. And I'm telling him a story. And about something, and he goes, dude, hold on, before you continue, don't you remember I was there? And I just think that's kind of cool. And also, too, I think we have different versions of ourselves as we go through life, man. There was the, you know, 18-year-old Uncle Paul that stands before you now, or actually grew up into the old, fat, bald Uncle Paul that is on this podcast right now speaking to you. I'm going to tell you, man, that the 18-year-old version was a little different. And I'm sure you guys can say the same. So it's nice having that rich kind of history. So that's one of the things that, you know, I decided to do, rekindle more of those friendships. But also, you ready for this? I decided that it's important to make new friends. When you get over a certain age, it ain't as easy to make friends. So, you know, I started working at that more. And it's made a great difference. And I'm going to tell you what, especially today, it's made a big difference. Do you know, the day before my wife's surgery, a lot of my dear friends know that I'm worried. Of course I would be worried, right? And I've gotten some wonderful messages and calls from all of my friends, but also a lot from my new friends. And, you know, I don't know, guys. It's just sometimes we need that army at different times of our life. And right now it's welcome to have that army. I can tell you that. But also too, I made a note. I want to continue playing the guitar. I've been playing for 40 years. Camping. Dates with my wife. Now more than ever, folks. Also, more, you know, I really enjoy having that one-on-one time with my kids. One of the things that I do, and I just started doing it this year, man, and I love it, is on Saturday nights now, my wife Laura will go and hang out with her friends, or, you know, sometimes her mom and dad or whatever, and I hang out with my cigar-smoking friends, my cigar friends. These are kind of like the new friends that I was telling you about. We all hang out at this one lounge, and we usually start about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My wife is still at work. She works on Saturdays, so it's not like I'm taking time away from her. Again, she has her routine that she does on Saturdays, and we have days that we're together. And so on Saturdays at 3 o'clock, what it usually starts with is, of course, a cigar, either, you know, a beer or, you know, or a few beers or a bourbon or three. And no, I don't drive after doing that. I just take an Uber home, right? It's a lot better and a lot safer, and certainly not worth hurting someone or myself, right, to not do that. We'll do that a little bit later on, like around dinner time. We all chip in. We get a nice dinner. We're breaking balls. We're telling stories. And it's a lot of fun, man. And I got to tell you, you know, especially right now, they've become my support group. And I'm thinking, man, if I didn't make that conscious effort to build up that body armor by by building up my friendships. I'll tell you what, man, I'd be going into this battle with my wife, you know, with a few less people, you know, in that army. So I think that's important. But those are some of the things that I chose to do, just so you know, to help. And again, I don't know that I've told you anything today that represents rocket science, but I guess really the main takeaways that I have for you. Number one, I think there's a lot of sales trainers and a lot of thought leaders out there that would have you believe that they're perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm far from it. I don't think there's any downside in me telling you that I just went through a rough spell. I don't think that makes me any weaker in your eyes. And if it does, I'm probably not the guy you want to hang out with, right? I tend to gravitate toward real people that are actually human. And I shared it with you today so you understand, like you, I go through some awful things. And also, too, I guess you never know, right, what people are going through. Those of you who've been listening to my podcast, you probably think, wow, I never knew you were going through that. And I chose not to talk about it. And just the act of talking about it today has made me feel a little bit better. But it makes me feel better knowing that I'm hoping that I helped you. Because what I try to do is identify a few lessons that I used. And just kind of by way of a very, very quick review, let's go through some of the things. I mean, first of all, one of the things that we had talked about is understanding or at least finding something when you have something shitty going on that you actually can control. So how did I control some of the things? Doing that meal prep. That's something that I could do. I felt like I was doing something productive. We can control our thoughts. We can use that whole idea of the pattern interrupt. And when, you know, my thoughts were going in places that were horrible, right, that weren't productive, that were making me feel quite miserable. Like, you know, I just wanted to go and get, like, you know, hammered freaking drunk and just forget about it all, right? Just kind of check out. You know, I thought about that acronym that Zig Ziglar provided about fear, false evidence appearing real. And I talked to myself in the pattern interrupt in the way that I speak to you guys, almost like, hey, cut the shit. Like, what the F is this, Castain? What do you think? What is this shit? Are you kidding me? This isn't real. This is false evidence appearing real. Knock it off. I think of Cher in that movie Moonstruck, slapping, bitch slapping Nicolas Cage. Knock it off. Right? That kind of thing. So, you know, it's a nice pattern interrupt. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, I really think that you ought to give some thought after this podcast today and think about how you can build up your body armor and kind of stay ahead of your mental health. The whole purpose of staying ahead of your mental health is so that when you get a sucker punch, you've built up a tougher skin. You've got the body armor. Why? Because you've been doing shit that makes you feel great. And you know what? The other thing about this whole thing, about staying ahead of your mental health, is that when these things happen, you've got to embrace the things that make you feel good, right? Like what I'm doing right now. I'm spending more time with my kids. I'm spending more time with my friends. You know, my wife and I, we're going to have this wonderful opportunity for the next 2 months while she's home. You know what that's going to be? We never watch TV shows together and be able to have a lot more time in the house. We're going to have a lot more family time. Now, all my kids are still home. Two of them work out of the house. We're talking, all of us, about having game nights and all kinds of cool things like that. What a wonderful opportunity. And thinking about, you know, how you define things, and we think about that Dr. Seuss quote, right? Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And that's it, folks. That's really all that I have for you. And, you know, your assignment is to define the things that bring you joy and then start doing them. Start living your life. And hopefully, you know, you're not going to go through what I just went through. Maybe you're going to have your own version of it, right? And when you do, maybe these things will help you. I really hope that, you know, is going to be the case, that maybe some of these things will help you. I want to leave off on a final thing, and it's something I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. And, you know, we've launched a new sales training program, and I'm calling it a one-on-one sales training program because it's rather unique. Most sales training, especially now, right, with the pandemic, it's online. And it lacks that one-on-one where you're actually having somebody talk to you and hold you accountable. You can't hide in a classroom. But it actually combines the best of both worlds, where you're going to have the one-on-one time with someone who has an incredible amount of experience. And you know what? I have to tell you, just as a side note, man, we've all been taught to be modest. And I certainly try to be modest. But one thing I'm not going to be modest about, seriously, call me the most arrogant prick in the world, but I'm not going to be modest right now. And I'm going to tell you something. I have a hell of a lot of trench warfare experience. I'm not kidding you. You know, like how much? How about 38 years of it? To find someone who has 38 years of trench warfare experience, who's only 55 years old, man, or 56 rather. I'm losing track of my own F and H here. I almost said the F curse right there. It started coming out. Did you guys hear it? I was like, and I kind of stopped. I felt like the kid on A Christmas Story, whatever. I almost said it. I really almost said it. But anyway, I probably should have said it now, because then I could say that I was distraught because my wife's having surgery and blamed it on that, right? But, you know, it's very rare that you're going to find someone with 38 years of trench experience, meaning like I sell every day still. A lot of sales trainers, when they, you know, even come close to the level of experience that I have, they haven't really sold anything, you know, in God knows how long. And even so, you look at how much actual sales experience they have, and it's really not much. So one of the things that I do a little bit differently is, first of all, having that level of experience, but creating this program where there'll be online modules that you'll do, and they're going to be based on what you need, not based on what I have. It's going to be looking at, all right, we need to improve these skills, and these skills. I'll have some things that you can do on your own, but I'm going to tell you something else. We're going to be working on them one-on-one. So if you'd like to learn more about this program, and I hope you do, because one of the best things you could possibly do is get a jump start on 2022. Here it is, October 7th. Many of you will be listening to this on the 8th. How cool would it be to get a month and a half jump start on those goals? And this would be a wonderful step for you. So please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.